Welcome, friends and gamers. Thank you again for tuning in. In this episode of the Web3 Gamer, we talk to Peter Tomala. Peter Tomala. I only do that because, as you'll know, we found out we're both Italian, and I always got to share the love for any of my fellow Italians. Peter is the CEO and founder of World Play League, the world's first player-owned game league. He focuses on helping game studios engage their community while giving players the opportunity to connect their online and in-person gaming accounts. And I gotta say, it's a really interesting concept Peter has here. He really wants this to be community-owned. He really wants people to eventually, you know, do a lot more in-person things with a lot of their assets and the way their platform is trying to work. And I won't spoil it all, but Peter has a lot of interesting big plans that I haven't seen anybody trying to really replicate outside of a specific niche, maybe for a particular sport or game type in that sense. So as not to spoil anything else, I will let Peter do all the talking and explain and sell you on why World Play League is going to be very interesting and a wonderful thing, I think, for the future. Alas, we are starting to get ad reads. So that being said, hopefully they're not too much, not too long. I really only have one right now, and it's for a specific game out there. The game is called D-Verse World. Embark on an epic journey in D-Verse World, a groundbreaking creative sandbox RPG that fuses thrilling adventure with the art of metaverse building. In this expansive universe, you, the traveler, are set to explore endless procedural floating isles, each offering a unique slice of adventure and creativity. And one of the greatest things they're doing is free mints for their NFTs, for their Common Isles mint on OpenSea. It sold out 10,000 in just 1.5 hours, a testament to the game's captivating allure. But don't worry, there's going to be more NFT sales. There's going to be private mints if you have the selected Pioneer Celestial Pass on April 2nd at 9 p.m. This window of opportunity broadens from 9 p.m. on April 4th to April 11th for all Celestial Pass owners. So you can go check out their Celestial Passes, check out the game, go find them on Twitter, really explore it, see if it's going to be something to you. I think it offers a lot of interesting play. The last clip I saw actually reminded me of some Helldivers gameplay. So for anybody interested in that, I highly recommend looking into it. There is a lot going on, and they've been very kind to me every time I've reached out to them and talked to them about their game. So I'm happy to plug them on here. Look, every podcaster has to make this ask, but it helps us so much when you rate us on any platform you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Google, Apple. You don't understand how much that helps us. Leave a review. I would love to start reading reviews on the show in the beginning show notes, but I haven't gotten any yet. You know, I get star ratings, but nobody leaves a typed up review, and that would just be something awesome for me to start doing as a part of the show. I would also love for you to reach out to me at theweb3gamer@proton.me. That is theweb, the number 3, gamer, at proton.me. That's the best way to get a hold of us. Additionally, you can find me on LinkedIn and Twitter. That's where I'm most active. Feel free to shoot me a message on there, tag me in something. Just reach out, you know, don't be a stranger. Additionally, if you really love the show and want to support us in the best sense, we have a Patreon, which you can subscribe to for as little as a dollar just to show your support. $1 a month? I don't think that's too much to ask. And every dollar counts with hosting fees, finding guests, all the upkeep and stuff that I am happy to do. But, you know, it would make me feel great having people support me, for sure. Additionally, if you just want to buy me a cup of tea or coffee or maybe just a nice snack, I will put my Cash App in the show notes for every episode from now on, and you can donate whatever you want. Heck, donate a penny, I'll take it. But, you know, if you give me $3 to $5, it helps me get a nice cup of joe. So anything's appreciated. Thank you so much. My name is Matthew, and I'm the Web3 Gamer. This podcast episode is brought to you by Espacio Meatball. It
It is a ball of meat with a bit of spice, but not too much spice, but it is enough spice to make it a spicy meatball. Did you know that the Italian meatball does actually not have any origins in Italy? It has more origins in the creation of the immigrants came from Italy to America in the earlier turn of the 20th century. So when somebody tells you their meatball recipe goes back generations to the motherland, just know they are full of poo-poo.
Welcome back, friends and gamers. My name is Matthew Simone. I'm the Word Through Gamer, and I'm here with Peter Tomala. Correct.
Yeah.
Tomala, yeah. The Italian, right? Yes.
Yeah, Italian. Yeah, there you go.
Who is the CEO of World Play League. Peter, how's it going? Where are you calling in from?
Amazing. Calling in from Minnesota in the United States. That may be, you know, Midwest, if you're not familiar. Central.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A classic great place. People haven't been to Minnesota, don't know what they're missing.
Yeah. Right now they're missing cold, which is what we're known for. generally speaking, outside of that, it is a great place. So yeah, not I wouldn't say the Web3 gaming hub, but fortunately with this thing called the internet, we've been able to have a pretty far reach outside of just Minnesota.
Right? Completely. And that's been the nice thing. I mean, that's one of the ways in which we've been able to connect. You know, LinkedIn, I swear, the amount of people I can meet on LinkedIn blows my mind continuously. And I don't consider myself a social media person at all, but
there's still good things that happen in the social space, I swear.
yes, definitely. Yeah. I think it's a lot of, you know, moving through the weeds, so to speak, but there's a lot of gold to be found still. So
yeah, there you go. Good analogy. I like that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so before we even jump into like, what is World Play League? What are you trying to do? I mean, I would love to know modern stuff to hear, like, what's your background? Where how'd you get started in this project? You know, are you a crypto fan, Web3 fan, NFT fan? How'd you get here?
Yeah, how did I get here? By way of my parents. We're probably not going to go back that far, are we? Where do I start? So I have a little bit of a sports background. I first got involved into broadcasting out of college, kind of more on the collegiate side, which is helpful for the foundation of the league, right? Having that understanding of entertainment and sports and how all of that collide. After spending some time doing that, worked in the digital marketing sphere, which then is how I got exposed to the crypto side. So that was back in about 2016. I was helping lead a digital marketing agency, and we were one of the first in the West of the United States to start taking on blockchain-based clients. And this was back when it was like money laundering across state lines. Like there was some stuff we had to do back in the day, which was fun, I guess. We just made sure we didn't want to go to jail, which is still the goal today, still not to go to jail.
Right.
And from that experience, started working with gaming clients. And I had a little bit of experience of that previously in kind of the sports world. We worked with gaming entities, that type of thing. And then really started working more outside of the agency with consulting, working on marketing campaigns, kind of a marketing background, and then just really diving deep into that. So as the crypto scene got hot and had a background in that, and gaming's always been, you know, there, right? I mean, I've been playing games since I knew how to work thumbs. It was a natural transition to see those two come together. And, you know, there's a lot of unknowns in the space, but there's still a lot of best practices that still need to happen from a marketing perspective, especially in the Web3 gaming scene. But there's still a lot of just, what are you doing? You know, and that's how I got my in and did that for about 6 or 7 years and saw the struggles, especially on the indie gaming side or gaming companies that were starting out, just acquiring and retaining players. But all of the potential that could be there, especially on the player side, which then back in 22 is where WPL got its start. So then from then to now brings us to today.
Yeah. So then would you say that kind of your culmination of experiences was part of what inspired you behind founding World Play League?
Yeah.
And what, I guess, so in founding that, besides, you know, I've read on your website, you know, I loved the pitch of, you know, taking you back to like kind of the day and age where, you know, there's kids on your street, you play with those kids, you know, the play yard, whatever sport it is, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm wondering, like, what was it you were hoping from your experiences to, you know, with World Play League to aim to transform the landscape of competitive Web3 gaming that you felt was just, it wasn't there. You know, usually people who create something feel there's something missing and that's what they can offer and build in the space, so to speak.
Well, and I think specifically building in the space, I saw, and this is a painting a very broad brush. We work with a lot of great partners and studios that don't have this perspective. But I will say, in terms of working within there, there seemed to be a little bit more of a tunnel vision into how we address things. And we have our community, right? From the one of the first runs on altcoins that I got involved with all the way until today, there's still us as a DeGen community, which is super, super fun. And the speculation and the coins and all those different types of things. But I still think that there hasn't been a great way to have this broader outreach, right? So there's always been the comment of, oh, bringing in Web2 games into Web3, or we've got to make this or that more accessible. But I still think in just working with the average person, the average gamer, even the average person just like sports, right, or games overall, it hasn't been that accessible to them. Now, I think the technology's gotten a lot better over the last 2 years in terms of like making that technology disappear, because I think that's when we'll get that mass adoption. But I think also just the gameplay and how the community start to come together and talk, right? Abstracting some of that language away and making it very accessible for people and from the playing experiences. So I really saw, I think, a need to increase the pie instead of just targeting inside here, while still making sure that we have ways to allow us that are very blockchain familiar to have all the things that we care about, right? In terms of, you know, our wallet capabilities, that ownership side, the transparency side, all of those types of things, while still having opportunities for the larger audiences. So that's where that started to come together in terms of why we started it, because I think we just needed to have more of that outreach. And I think we also wanted to be able to reach more people across different communities, right? So this wasn't just the Web3, Web2 narrative. It was different countries. It was different experiences. Whereas where you start to get kind of that playground, the gaming experience, which is everyone in their own areas have those things that they gravitate towards, whether the local games or the, you know, you can be in cricket is very popular in one area of the world. It could be race car, you know, or football or soccer, you know, different types of sports or different types of games are very popular. Card games, billiards, whatever. You get the point. But having something for them that is accessible from a gaming perspective that would welcome them into the space rather than some of the game titles or genres that I think get a little overdone. So we're kind of zigging when everyone's zagging, which, you know, could be a good thing. We hope so. But we didn't want to be just doing what everyone was doing.
Sure. So then, like, I guess let me ask too, like, what is... probably best, I should have asked this first. What is like the high level overview of like, what is World Play League? What are you aiming to do? What are you bringing for, just for the audience to know?
Yeah, I mean, real briefly, we are a player owned game platform, right? Very, very simply, where we take the input from our players that are going to be within our ecosystem, and they help to shape the league, right? The catalog of our games, right? That's very simple. Now, what that starts to look like is last year we started specifically being more of a B2B provider. So working just with studios on helping them with their acquisition and their retention and helping them with their tooling. And what that looks like is, you know, helping them go to markets in different geographical markets, or helping them on the analytics side or the tooling side, the infrastructure side, right? Being a real resource to them for Web3 specifically. And then moving forward, what we really see us being is getting more into the player side, where we have one unified system across all of the games that are in our catalog, where you have one place where you can have your standings, your statistics, all of your attributes, all of your abilities into one performing studio. And then you can then start to segment that out, right? And then you start to get into the playground, the localization side of it, which is, well, it'd be great for me to understand how I compare across the world, in my country, in my state, in my city, in my neighbor, right? Like those types of things. But we have to build out that ecosystem first. We've got to get really good gaming partners first before, you know, we build up that side of it. So the vision is very player centric, but we obviously needed to start somewhere, which was on the studio side, in terms of making sure that we've got great games and we've got great opportunities for the players to get excited about.
Gotcha. And so I know a big thing with World Play League is this, you know, you're touting it as the world's first player-owned league. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate what that means from y'all's standpoint and what you hope it means for the player's standpoint and how it's supposed to benefit both the players and the fans?
Yeah, I mean, this comes from probably a lot of the fandom that I experienced, you know, being on the professional side of sports and the amateur side and just being a fan, right? And you can think of it, take any entity that you want as an example. You can think of, you know, in the States, you know, the National Football League, you can think of FIFA, you can think of whatever is important to you as an example, right? So what could that look like if, to take those as an idea, if the players or the fans owned it outright? What would that look like, right? The revenue distribution, the dictating of what teams or entities are inside of that league, like all the little things that, you know, people get excited about, from trading deadlines or free agents or sponsorship deals or tournament format, like all the little stuff, but all the stuff that I think we're really excited about as fans. What could then that look like if all of us had a say in that, had a voting side? So then just take that and put that into the digital end. That's what it means to be a player-owned league. So think of all of the games that come in to the platform that we work with. Right now, it's internally to our team, but eventually, you know, this year, as our token comes out, that'll be a governance option and a voting option for the players. So all of those games that we have now that are coming in are the games, right? Are the entities that you can play. And then what can you do then from, again, sharing in the advertising revenue, from making decisions on who's actually entering the catalog, the decisions on teams, you know, players. I mean, we can really start to do some really fun stuff when we connect all the players together inside of one league, inside of one ecosystem. So we're very excited about that component to it. We're starting to talk a little bit more about it with like this, like the podcast right now, but mm-hmm. It hasn't been like fully, I would say, broadcasted yet, because we've just been so hyper-focused on helping and assisting the studios that we work with right now. But yeah, we definitely see that as the strong vision of having one system for the players and then having their input, their voting, and sharing in that success with, you know, everybody that's involved.
So then let me ask this, is an end goal for y'all, depending on the games, obviously, that get onboarded, is to kind of have like your own esports leagues at a point? Is that something maybe in your circle, or maybe an idea? Possibly. I don't know. I guess it depends if that's what the players want.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of this is allowing for adaptability and allowing for flexibility. Like, so we have a back end that helps our studios, and it's very module based. I'm not going to get technical right now, but it allows for flexibility and adaptability. The same is going to be true in terms of how things happen within the community, specifically what games it looks like, but also where that goes. Like, could you see us, you know, WPL becoming like this esport organization? You could. I mean, I think that is a pathway we could get into if that's ultimately what's decided within, you know, the voting end. But what I would say is we're finding a lot of interest and a lot of applicable ways, even with the studios that we have, in terms of tying in some of the real world data or game data, what people are already doing, and really building that out. You know, like I play adult men's softball, however cool that is. It's whatever, you know, and I've been doing that for way too many years. But like tying those components into a centralized, like a unified hub. I say centralized not because of centralized like blockchain, but more like one place we can go through that data. But like more, we have, I can name drop some of the games with some of the students. Like we have a game called like Pickle Zone, and they're a pickleball, which is very popular in the States. And, you know, they work with matching people in real life playing their game, but they're a Web3 application. They're a Web3 entity. So that's like taking that data from people that are playing pickleball against one another. What could that start to look like if, you know, those same type of people now play a digital racing game, like we're affiliated with Nitro League, which is a racing game? Like what could start to happen with player profiles or rewards or different things as people start to interact in different environments? Like we see that as the vision as things start to blur. Right. As the physical stuff that I do, but specifically in the gaming side and the sports side, what can that start to look like in the digital games that I'm playing, and unique opportunities that arise there with different incentives, different rewards, different wins, losses? Like maybe you're really good in real life playing a game, but you're not digitally, or vice versa. Right. And starting to look at what that gaming profile looks like for you specifically as a player. And I think that's where we start to see some of this really exciting thing. So we've got, I think, of the first 15 that we have, I think 4 are some sort of like move to earn or play to earn, like some sort of app or component that are Web3 related. Like I mentioned pickleball. I mentioned like it's some active AR apps that we have. Like I think that's a really interesting opportunity for us to start to blend things and blur the lines a little bit more. AR would say the same, right? VR, AR is saying, well, we're blending virtual and in real life, because you are, right? You put the thing on and you go play. We're just taking that a different direction with your data. You own your data, your standings, your wins, losses, whatever you're playing. And now what can you start to do that to kind of build up your gaming profile in a way that maybe hasn't been realized before?
Sure. And it sounds like in a way too, that like that gaming profile of this combination of like the physical and the digital can give you this gaming profile that may potentially reward you or integrate aspects of rewards in these activities you're already participating in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not looking to get in the middle of that experience, right? We're not looking to be like, oh, you've got to do this in WPL and then go somewhere else and do it. Like, we're promoting apps, games that already exist or will exist, and helping to get them, obviously shining some light on them, of course. And that's why we have the catalog that we do, but also just for players, allowing them to track that or have that ability to see their performance over time or whatever it is that they're interested in of things they're already doing. But, you know, a lot of that gets lost, right? We can talk about, you know, when apps go away or gaming profiles go away or when a server goes down or whatever, the technical challenges there. But I think that there's also this new way of thinking through tournaments or playability, or like, I can play pickleball against my mom. I mean, I'll destroy her every single time, but then she probably kicked my butt on the digital version of pickleball. I'm like, oh, now we have like a win-loss against her. Like, there's a lot of things that I think, especially bridging age gaps or different cultures or different, you know, just experiences that I think is happening and is going to continue to expand as technology, and I said, like, what we do in our life starts to blur a little bit more together.
Well, no, and that's fair. And so, you know, it sounds like you're kind of combining this emotional excitement of kind of, depending on the game, traditional playground games with these new and emerging technologies. So I'm wondering, what is your measurement to maintain this, to make sure the emotional aspect isn't lost, you know, especially in the digital translation from physical to digital?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, right? And I think that that's something that I think we still get it, right? Off the games we play now, like, I'm, you know, the games that you play, the games that I play, whatever it is, there's still an emotional connection to those games. That's why you have the lore, the stories, the different types of mechanics in the games to create that. I think there's a different, you know, sort of feeling you get off of a physical high, right? The endorphins that we release of that, but there still happens in the digital sphere. Like, if you're playing your Call of Duty or a soccer game or a racing game, whatever it is, you still want to win. Like, you still have that feel to it, but I think it can just be applied to different genres of games where you're, you know, taking that with you. I mean, one of the things that, you know, that is going to occur soon, this isn't what we're doing, but just to give you more examples of where we see this headed, is, you know, you can play a game on your computer and then pick it up right back on your mobile, right? Like, those kind of those accounts, that playability, those types of things, that's already occurring, right? And then and game studios are working on that, but it's just kind of this, you know, Ready Player One situation, right? Like, I think there's just a morphing of this as is naturally occurring. We wanted to be a part of that, but we also didn't want to lose sight of how it all began, right? Which was games, which is getting together. So I think our role in this has really been, we still want to be able to highlight the experiences that are already occurring and give people an incentive to continue to do that and not just be focused on just, oh, I got to play this game and be just doing that. I think there's a lot more experiences that are available to us.
No, that's fair. And so then in that way, it's, how are you looking to empower the fans, players, and game studios to decide which of these games are played in the rules governing them?
Yeah. I mean, another good question, right? We really, this is probably one of the first things we really want to give over to the community, is the decision-making process of what comes in. You know it, just probably just like anyone else, like, it's hard to pick winners in the gaming industry. Like, a majority fail, right? Like, close to like 95% do, right? It's a pretty bad statistic. True, but it's horrible. We feel that the players are going to have a better say, or at least have a more of a pull on that than, you know, than the average executive somewhere, right? So regardless of the genre, the category, or what it looks like, we feel giving the community that type of power, that then that involvement in the governments, is really, really important. And so allowing them to assess, you know, okay, this is something that I would want to play. This is something I want to be involved with. You know, our token can work across, you know, from the different layers of rewards across, you know, the gaming systems. I think this would be a really strong asset in getting them to play. But also the other component to that is, you know, does that game that's being considered also have an existing community? Are they going to be able then to contribute to the network, to our ecosystem as well, right? And so getting that type of back and forth creates a real strong network, because you have people that are interested in joining us, but you also have our community vetting part of that out to make sure that it continues to get stronger as we expand, right? So everyone is having a say, but it's also making decisions that, okay, this would really complement us because we need like a volleyball game, or gosh, we really need like some sort of alien basketball game. Like, I'm making stuff up, right? But it's just like, we really feel like this would be a strong asset. And oh, by the way, their community, regardless of numbers, like I can go down a deep rabbit hole on like vanity metrics out there in the social sphere, but like, is the community involved? Do they care? Do 100 people, 1,000 people, whatever it is, really care about this game within that community? That's way more important than maybe some of the other metrics that are there. So anyway, I can go off on a long tangent on it. I'll try to wrap that part up. But that voting mechanism, that ownership side, I think is really, really important to who we are as a company.
Yeah, no, definitely. One, and I know what you mean about vanity metrics. I'm having literally met, well, just I've been thinking about joining Discord servers for Web3 games where they've got hundreds of thousands of followers on Twitter. They claim they have this really bullshit community. And when I'm in their Discord, it's really dead. There's not much going on. And I'm like, so, you know, you can't really claim you have a 500,000 plus user base if they're not active. You know, if somebody follows your Twitter account and then forgets about it and doesn't unfollow, you can't count them as an active user in your player base, you know? And I think that happens more often than it doesn't, like you're saying, versus I having joined Discord servers and I'm just like, man, there's only like 10,000 people following this game, but this Discord like never shuts up. It's always popping off. There's always things going on. People are always looking to play. People are engaged. And so I totally know what you mean about you don't have to do too much sleuthing to find out where there's a bullshit community around a game or not. And I think that gets even tougher when your game is either in alpha or beta. You know, you don't have the full thing out yet, and there's a bullshit community around it. You're like, well, imagine once it's finally done and everything's out there. So I do agree with you there.
Yeah, you've got to mean something to someone, right? And that's a better metric, because you can find more of those types of people out there. But it's tough too, right? The other side of it is, I experience it every day. Like you get an influencer, you get some game, and they're like, oh, we got 300,000 people. And it instantly you go, wow, right? Like every time you go, well, that's great, right? Oh, I got 500,000. Instantly, just inside, you're like, well, that's a great number. That's awesome, right? And that it already puts you on prove me wrong rather than prove me right. Like if you get, oh, I have 1,000, and you might go, probably not. But some of those 1,000 people accounts are going to have 900 active crazy, and that 200,000 one is going to have like two comments, right? Or like nothing, right? But it's really hard. That's why it works, right? For people that make that money, is because we see the top line number, and it's hard to shy away from it. So, but to your point, if you just go one step further or two steps further and do your research, you're going to be able to see beyond that, which, you know, is part of the process as well.
Well, then just for people who may not understand, how would you, that one or two steps further, what does that look like for you or World Play League? You know, if you're trying to field a game you want to bring on that you want to make sure they actually have a bolstered community in place.
Yeah. I mean, we look at a couple of different things, right? We have multiple conversations with a studio before we're like, we should totally work together. Part of it's, you know, the team, right? Is there at baseline, synergies between us? Are we on the same page with the vision, with Web3, with welcoming to the community? Do we play well together in the same sandbox, that type of thing? Because it's all important, right? You're looking at those types of attributes. Have they done it before? I mean, not necessarily do you have to have developed your own game before, but do you have some level of experience that's going to make this, you know, successful? So we look at the team first and foremost. Then we're looking at some level of the game, right? Is it, if depending on the stage it's in, is it an alpha, is it a beta? Do you just have mock-ups of something? But is this game design aesthetically or functionally going to be serviceable, right? Because there's been some crazy games out there that I wouldn't thought would have done anything. And they're like, wow, yeah, that's making all these millions of dollars. So we try not to look at it that way. We do want to make sure that it's in line with what we're looking to in terms of like, we're not taking a lot of hyper casual games for an answer. Like the team could be great, community could be good, but that's just not going to fit well with our catalog. So there's that part of it. And then the community side, right, is like, you know, we are looking at the socials. We are looking at, do they have partners? That can mean investment partners. That can just mean, you know, infrastructure partners or guilds or something. Like, has there other been people that have looked at this and gone, yeah, I mean, we'll go first if we have to. It's not like, oh, we're like a VC and like, oh, you know, prove to us. Like, no, I hate that stuff. But it's more like, you know, do you have people following you? Have people vouched for this is going to be cool, whether it's a company or whether it's a community? And then again, not really caring about those top line numbers, more, do you have people commenting on your posts? Do you have people showing up for a Twitter space or an AMA? Like, that's a great indicator, right? Do you have people showing up when you're online to talk about your game? Yes or no, right? Mm-hmm. And if whatever that answer is, that's a good indicator rather than I have this many follows. So we go through that process overall. Sure. And then do we feel like there's an opportunity to actually help them? You know, whether it is, you know, taking them to a new market, whether it's on the data side, whether it's like help hosting tournaments or marketing support, like, is there a good fit there? So we go through all of that. And then, you know, we would come to it. So, yeah, I guess that kind of gives it to it in a nutshell.
No. And that provides a lot more insight. So then you kind of also too, like, depending on these studios, like, I know you were saying like World Play League focuses a lot on providing like kind of like maybe tooling infrastructure. Mainly you talked about like user acquisition, like retention and support. Can you detail or talk about like any of these types of tools or support you're offering to these existing games, or that you see like a lot of these games come in struggling with and you're like, oh, well, you're struggling with X. Luckily we provide Y.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the back end infrastructure side, especially to make the transition into Web3, we tend to lean on our partners for that or have opportunities on that side. So whether it's like through an IMX or a Scale or that type of opportunity, like there's people that do it great. And so we're not reinventing that wheel. But what we tend to look at is on the marketing end, you know, and specifically, what are you doing within your community to grow it, but also to retain them? So, I mean, campaigns, you know, tournaments, you know, different types of activations, partnerships, you know, those types of growth within that perspective. For our studios, we have a back end outside of that infrastructure that I had mentioned, maybe on like the marketplace authentication, that type, but more on the in-game data, statistics, that type of thing. But also, you know, cross-referencing that with wallets, you know, what they hold, social data, you know, what they're doing in other types of games, that type of thing. So we're really helping the studios to understand what their players want and to better, you know, understand player behaviors, to, you know, understand what that could look like from a game mechanic standpoint in terms of what should happen. Are people leveling up? What are they doing with this sword? What are they doing, you know, with this basketball and, you know, that type of thing? Like, understanding it to better provide experiences that help on the retention side. So I think, you know, coming from a marketing and performance marketing background, like, data tells it. Like, without data, without having good data and having that as a foundation, you're kind of just shooting in the dark. You're just hoping that something's going to work based off of hearsay or because you're taking a best guess. Data helps a lot to demystify that and to make really the best educated decision as you can. So again, we have a back-end platform that helps out on the studio side. Then as we grow and as we're expanding, you know, we're taking these leaderboards and these standings and those types of things within the studio side and then making that player focused. We're probably a quarter or two away from unveiling that part on the player side. We have, like I said, we haven't been too player focused up to this point, but mm-hmm. when that starts to roll out, you're going to see another side, which is the league, right? Like, right now we're very B2B, like I mentioned. The WPL, the L side, is coming out, you know, in the next, you know, quarter or two, which obviously we're very excited about.
Well, so then and maybe we've kind of touched on it, but just since you've brought it up now, like, what are you hoping the league is going to look like to you, or like what that unique perspective is going to bring to the players outside of the things you already discussed about, you know, you want them to have a say in it, you want it to be like an equal footing, governance, ownership, all that.
I mean, I guess I probably have two answers to that. Let me give the quick one, and then I'll give like more emotional. I mean, the quick one would be, we want them to be successful, you know, whether that's monetarily or just, you know, having fun, right? That's first and foremost, right? And so some people are going to come in and because they want to win rewards or they want to make money and those types of things, and that's always going to exist, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you should kind of come because the games are fun, because you want to be entertained, because you want to have a great experience. And that's our first and foremost priority from where we're looking to go to it. But like the second thing, the more emotional side, is we want them to, you know, be the type of player that they want to be, whatever that means. Help them on that journey, whether it's improving digitally speaking, as a gamer, as a performer, maybe they want to level up and get more competitive and get into tournaments and have a foundation, a microphone, you know, a spotlight for them to do that. Maybe it's just having an ecosystem, you know, somewhere they can go with their family or their friends local to their community and have something where it's like, oh, I'm beating you, you know, 5-1, or I'm doing this game and you haven't beat me in 3 weeks or something like that. And it, because it's a, we have a pickleball game and we have a billiards game, and we have a soccer game, and we have basketball, like these little tiny opportunities that create stronger connections, right? Like, I think for some people, it's going to be creating that relationship and that connection, you know, countries away. Right. And that's going to be doesn't matter. But there's a lot of gamers out there. There's a lot of players. Like, I played a lot of board games in my life. Right. That just sitting across the table from somebody and having that connection and experience is also very powerful. And so allowing that opportunity as well, whether you're a board game player or a billiards player, or if you, you know, Dungeons and Dragons to a digital game. Right. There's so many types of gamers. More than half the world games at this point. Right. Just statistically, everyone does this. Like, this is not a. This is a thing, and everyone does it. You talk to anyone, and they have a game that they play, and that's why we're really excited about the future, because the players themselves are going to be able to drive that forward, right? We have things, and I have things in my head of like, oh, gosh, that would be really cool, but as we grow that community and as new people with different perspectives come in, we're going to be able to be adaptable and changeable to what they want to see, so I hesitate to give a specific answer, even though I've got some very specific things in my head. Really want to have more input on that to allow it to grow, I think, in a very healthy, organic way.
No, that's totally fair. So then, and maybe you can't speak to this one too, just because you don't want to put out those specifics yet. But then, so in the way you're working to, you know, engage with these communities, these game studios and these games, you could argue everything you just said is your way of viewing at least your unique approach compared to, say, traditional gaming leagues, where it's kind of, cool. Is the game fun to play? But one, is there a market for monetization? And two, can we capitalize on that monetization within the market with our own league, so to speak?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, the traditional leagues, it's going to be a model that's going to be served to you, right? I mean, it's going to be, here's the structure of it. It's this game. You show up at X time, you play this, and that's the extent of it, right? That is just not how we're designed or how our vision and our platform is going to be created or has been created up to this point, which is there's going to be that input for you to figure out the best way that's going to work for you. And there may be variations to it, right? You may be playing the rules and stipulations for a gaming community in Brazil may be different than someone in Croatia, right? But it's, as long as we're all on the same page, we're in the same ecosystem, we can kind of adjust variables or different ways of playing it, right? Because there may be, I want it based off of certain things that you accomplished within a game. Well, some may just be focused on, I want it, is it win or loss, right? And that's a kind of a high level example to try to keep it simple. But again, allowing for that flexibility within specific gaming communities for that to grow. And again, that's different than saying you take a corporation or you take an existing association or entity and you join them, right? And now you're going to play within those parameters. That's not us, right? Like, we're starting from the ground up, we're building this thing, and we can continue to evolve it. I think that's one of the things that the market, specifically in gaming, is slow to adjust to, which is changing needs, changing preferences, and we can do that on the fly, right? As long as it votes and it passes, you can change the structure of what success looks like, which I think, pretty badass. There's my swear word for the day.
Well, and I think what you're getting at too is, luckily, when you have this community participation governance system, you have way more input than, say, what we look at mainly in traditional gaming or traditional leagues, whereas there is an inherent risk taken because you don't know how it's going to fall. And sometimes it falls really well and they go, hell yeah, and they just run with it. Sometimes it falls really bad and they're like, well, that was a huge waste of time and money, but we're going to have to just move on from that. I mean, I think about Battle Royale gaming, about just in traditional gaming when it came out, everybody was just like, ooh, on Fortnite. And I'm not even a Fortnite fan. So like, I have nothing against it, but I'm like, you can see the ripple effect it's had in all these other games making Battle Royale. And clearly Battle Royale as a game style and a play was a very, you know, highly sought after way of playing a game because it clearly has taken off in a multitude of other games and industries. But that was an inherent risk, you know, for someone to create, even though I'm pretty sure the origins of that is that had nothing to do with the original Fortnite game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Which is a funny part of it all.
And I think it's a good point. You're touching on something else there, which is the idea of risk, right? It's inherent in a lot of how things are created. Like, we want to do it, but is that risky or not? Like, you know, I've worked enough with corporate entities. You get into a lot of the institutional investors, that type of thing. Everything is risk, right? Like, we want it to be successful, but we don't want it to take that leap until we're ready, right? Which is, and it's like, hey, well, then it's not risky, right? There's a risk reward to these things. I mean, I think that I'm probably going to get quoted on it, but don't quote me on it. But I think every day there's, what, like 100, 150 games that are released, whether through the app, you know, mobile, through the app stores or Steam or whatnot. It's a lot of games, right? Oh, yeah. And it's tens of thousands of year get released. Majority of them are not seeing the light of day. And that's, some of them suck. A lot of them suck. That's fine, right? But there's a lot of good ones out there. And I think that's an argument that you go, okay, sure, but what does that mean? It means I think there's different ways. Like, you talk about the Battle Royale. There's different ways, I think, of engaging and playing, and some really talented teams out there. But because it's a risky proposition to bet on them, they don't get out and they fail, right? That just happens all the time. It is what it is. Not every game that gets created can succeed, but there's a lot of great quality games and teams out there that I think have had a structure where it's community backed, that it's going to allow for more success. Because again, it's less risky at that point if you bring in, or if a community says, hey, this game is wild. It's like fighting bananas with, you know, watermelon heads. And I go like, I don't know. I don't think that's great. But 1,000 people vouch for it and said they want to play it and they want to get in a beta. Guess what? That's not risky anymore, right? Because you have the community behind it. So I think that model of publishing, of game discovery, it gets watered down because of, you know, shareholders, stockholders, people that are in charge. And I gotta imagine there's a better way of doing this. And I shouldn't be the one deciding that, right? Like, we've been doing it as a team over the last year. Cool. But there's a better way of doing it. And that's what we're trying to evolve into this next year.
Well, yeah. And I've seen a thing in Web3 gaming now where it's almost like an easy, I don't want to say an easy way because it doesn't guarantee anything, obviously, but a way I've seen more studios get a community bolstered around a game before they've even made it is they go, hey, we would love to field art. Like, we're going to make, this is the game. We have characters. Here's a description. If people want to drop art of the characters, we'll take like the best ones in the community and we'll have the community vote. And that's going to be the character in the game. This community is already invested because they're like, oh, heck yeah. Like, we got to create some of the characters in the game. We got to choose what they look like, who they end up being. And so sometimes it's, you already have this user acquisition before you even released a game because you're like, they've had a play in the way in which the game has been created. And I know that that's kind of a tug and pull for some studios because they're like, well, I don't want to give them all the power because then it's like, it's not my game anymore and I have no creative, you know, suit in it. But I think there's a nice balance to be like, hey, like, this is our core value or our core idea for this game, but here's where we could really value from a community's input. And if y'all want to take the time to put in and be invested in it, like, this is going to help shape this game even better. I know it's like a controversial topic depending on the studio in Web3 of whether they're like, we're all for a community, or they're like, community has too much power, we need to limit community's power. It just depends on the person in the studio, obviously.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I agree generally with what you have. I've seen that work really well in terms of that feedback and getting the community involved. And I think Game Assets is a great way of doing it, right? The skins that are created, the uniforms, the swords, the attributes, the actual characters. I think it's a great way of doing it because it wouldn't even touch necessarily the game mechanics or the story, but you're talking about building that into it and getting that feedback. So I think it's a great way of collaborating with the community. And I mean, I'm a little bit more on that side of your comment than I am on the other side, which is, well, we're giving them too much. I think, especially in the Web3 arena, which has seen about a 75% failure rate up to this point, you know, like, I think we can try some stuff. It's not like we're 100% success ratio on this. Like, it's hard. Let's call it for what it is. And I love the developers. I love the entrepreneurs. Everybody that's in the space is grinding and everyone's doing an amazing job. But, you know, there's a perspective to this where for a lot of things, you're going to live and die by that community. So I think it would make sense to live more with them than not. But again, that's a me, Peter comment, not necessarily anybody else's. So I'll give that disclosure.
Sure. Well, and so, you know, that also brings into, you know, this is a, a UPeter perspective and a World Play League perspective of, you know, the whole, one of the main model of World Play League, from my understanding, is you want to connect this online and in-person gaming experience. And I'm wondering if you all can discuss, or if you've already foreseen or had any challenges and rewards of integrating these two particular aspects.
Yes. Can I just end it there? Yes, it is. No, I mean, it's more on the game format, right? So the way that we integrate into an app or to a game is via an API. So that's pretty straightforward, right? And then there's all this blockchain-ness that sits behind it, which is pretty great. And it's awesome to have those capabilities. I think that, again, when I go to the games that have like active AR, we have an active AR game. We've got like an active cricket game. We've got the pickleball game, right? We're bringing in a billiards one as well. And that have those components to it. But the data that gets fed to us ultimately would look the same, right? Like whether you participated in that in real life, so to speak, or if you did that digitally, it's going to have some metric to it. You're going to win, you're going to lose, or the score is going to be 20-5 or whatever it is. It's going to be, oh, I did this at this level or this inning or this, right? You're going to have similar types of performing data, which is ultimately all we're concerned about. So when it comes in to us, it looks the same or very similar. I mean, we can tell based off of the attributes or that data that's sent in. It's a struggle in the regards of, I think, just getting that across to people. And I think that's the hardest shift is go, seriously? I can just go do that. And then it would, well, yeah, you're logging it in an app, which again would be one of our partner studios that are doing it. You log it there and it sends it. And now you've got it in your account, in your portfolio, just like you would in any other game. So I think it's more the perception of that and getting through some of those, I would say, technical challenges that are already, like I said, have been worked through, I think, to a lot of degrees over the last couple of years. But, you know, I think that'll be an ongoing thing. But for our sake, for how we see it, a lot of that comes in the same type of formatting through the data, and then we're able to help them, you know, take it from there.
Well, and two, now, like, I'm thinking, like, it's going to be funny if, like, you've been saying the same thing the whole time, and after 40 minutes of talking, it's just going over my head. But is it one of the main points of World Play League to kind of have this one-stop shop for your gaming data, so to speak, and, like, a place to store it, and that, like, so you can kind of have this interconnectedness no matter, yeah. Ideally across, like, everything eventually, at least in Web3, so to speak.
Yeah, you got it. You nailed it. You're right on it, right?
Okay,
from the player perspective, you're all over it, right? A one-stop shop for you to have your player performance and for you to see that, again, in whether that, and then what that looks like in tournaments or leagues or just you playing, right? It's a one-stop shop for your player. I use the eloquent of, like, a unified ecosystem. I don't like saying the word centralization in Web3 talk.
Sure. You know, I get it. I know why.
I don't say it's a centralized account, which is kind of what it is, but it's not like in the essence, it's all using blockchain data. But yeah, it's a one-stop shop for your gaming entity, for you as a player.
Gotcha. Okay. So then, you know, what is your idea of, like, with the promise of true ownership, you know, what do you think that participation looks like within World Play League for an average fan or player, and how they influence the league?
Yeah, I think I guess average meaning like non-Web3 person, like how would they participate maybe?
Sure. Yeah, let's go with that perspective, actually.
You're like, yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, let's go with it. All right, yeah. I mean, I think that there's the voting side. There's the governance side that we hope to make very accessible to people. Through our token to get their inputs and get them involved into this club, into this community, right? Which is the Web3-ness. And that's one easy way, I think, to doing it, which is through the voting side and making that very accessible. The other side of it is just, and you're seeing a lot of that Web3 being abstracted away in terms of, like, when you log in or creating wallets or seed phrases, a lot of that's going into the background as it should.
Yep.
But really, to enter in for the average gamer, you should be able to just open up a game and play, right? Mm-hmm. And now if it's Web3 or not, you can dig into the details, but that's only if you want to, right? In terms of, like, you know, connecting your own wallet or understanding the marketplace mechanisms, a big, you know, selling or purchasing or whatever it happens to be. So I think for the average Web2 player, I think it's a couple different points, like allowing the access on the voting side, allowing them to just play the games they normally would, but then having an incentive layer for them to then, again, whether it be through ad revenue share or through the assets that they own, and then obviously just owning their own data, right? And owning all of that part of it, which is a Web3 answer, But I think once people see what that looks like in terms of like their performance and their history over time in different types of games, we find that it resonates pretty well on the player side. So our vision for that, to answer it more succinctly, is for a Web 2 player and to Web 3 player to not necessarily be that indistinguishable from each other. It's just that the Web 3s are going to know maybe a little bit deeper on how to work within the technology, or know a little bit more on the token side and maybe make more money, but they'll still be able to have similar playing experiences.
Yeah, and that's been a big, a good shift, I feel like, in the last two-ish years, is a lot of the studios have kind of taken that hybrid approach. They're like, look, we're trying to just be a fun to, especially the studios, they're like, we're trying to be a fun to play game. At the end of the day, we want you to just play it, interact, be a part of it. We have all these awesome, to us, blockchain aspects integrated. If you want to elevate your experience or have more to the just the game, feel free to participate, but there's no need to participate to still enjoy and play the game and be a part of a community, you know? And luckily, part of the benefit of being in that community is if you're like, I don't understand any of this, and there are people who do, they're happy to just be like, oh, I can walk you through things and help you figure it out. Like, it's not as complicated as it seems, you know? And like you said, a lot of that is going into the background where the UX design is becoming so much more seamless. It'll get to the point where, you know, you'll be logging in, connecting to a wallet, and it'll just seem no different than being like, I'm logging into my account, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I you've said it well. You've done this before.
Well, it's been lucky. I mean, you know, it's been a shift just seeing enough games make that transition and talking to enough studios that it makes sense to me from a player perspective. You know, I like this stuff, but I think about if I wanted to play a game with someone and it's a blockchain game and they're like, you know, there's that what people are like, Web3, like I don't want to deal with all that stuff. I'm like, no, you don't have to deal with any of that. It's just a fun to play game. You can do that. I like doing all this stuff. We can still play together without it. And I feel like that's a better way to get people onboarded to play your game. And then once they've had fun and you're like, hey, by the way, I'm using these things to either like make money or just like have more customization or have better benefits in game. They'd be like, well, I also want to do that too, because I like the game and I'm invested now. You know, I think it's a better, slower ramp up method for non Web3 enthusiasts, I guess, or non Web3 gamers.
Yeah. And I think to touch on that would be, I think it's been a perception issue. It's been a branding issue on that regard, because, you know, you get into a game, if you don't like the term blockchain, you don't want to be a Web3 gamer, great, right? But if you get into a game and then you're playing it and it's fun, and then someone goes, hey, you know, the two clicks of the button, you know, this car you've been racing with, you know, you can sell it, right? Like, and you can make some money off. People go, oh, I can sell the car and I can make like whatever, $50 off it. That's cool, right? Like, now I'm like, well, this is fun. Like, oh, that's because of the blockchain, right? Because of how this was set up. Well, now everyone's a big fan, right? Because now when you see it in action, it's not just like, oh, I got to go through all these barriers for it. Or it's like, hey, you know, I love whatever. I love the sandbox. I'll use the sandbox, right? And they go, well, I don't play it a lot, but I do think they got a great future. Well, now I can go get their token, right? Now I can be invested in that game, so to speak, without having to. Like, I think there's just some unique opportunities that exist within it, obviously why we're here and we're all involved in it. Mm-hmm. But if you just frame it a little bit differently to people, they go, well, yeah, that's cool. Or that's fun. Or yeah, why wouldn't I want to do that? And so, yeah, we put probably too many big words in front of things, or a lot of acronyms that are confusing. And now it's like, okay, let's start to get back to there. And then I think we can bring people along on the journey from there.
Yeah, no, definitely. Well, and so then that brings me to the question of, so in World Play League, players, fans, teams, and league owners are you know, proposed by y'all to be on equal footing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, a tall order. You know, how do you ensure this equality is going to be maintained as the league grows and evolves? Or is that an unknown at this point?
Strategically? So... yeah, this is really where our token comes in, right? So it's like, why do you need a token? Like, and if you can't answer that, then you probably shouldn't have one, right? Like, why do I need one, right? I think there's some really cool things that we're doing with it, from, like I mentioned, like the ad revenue side, and in terms of reward structure within the games, on the governance, right? I can speak about all the 12 things that we have that really make, I think, our token really strong. But one of the things too, that within the governance and the ownership, is exactly that, which is, again, what we're very excited about, which is the equal footing, meaning that a player owning it, just like a studio creating, just like us being, you know, I guess in management or production or however you want to say it, all are having that input being received, and we're on the same weight of that, right? Like, I can't veto your idea more than you could veto mine in terms of what the cat looks like. It's the equal footing in the regards of, the future of this league is very much going to be decided on, you know, those that are involved in it, which are going to be the players, but also the token holders, right? Because they're going to have to say in terms of the voting side. So I guess if I was dumb enough to not own any WPL, I would be screwed. And I wouldn't, even though running the thing, I wouldn't have that input to it. But for those that do, they're going to be able to have that say, which is, again, why we organize it the way we do, which, to say, regardless of where you're at in playability, with where you're at in terms of technical, whatever that happens to be, your input in terms of what games come in, how the games are played, how we manage, you know, some parts of the treasury and like kind of, you know, what that looks like, you know, that's accessible to you. And we're going to make it and dumb things down as much as possible to you know, to bring in a bigger audience as we can.
So would you say that, you know, that kind of goes obviously beyond just playing games, that's a way in which you're hoping to really engage the community in your governance and operational aspects of the overall league?
Yeah, exactly. It's a way for us to say, oh, maybe you're not this big of a player or this big of a gamer, but I can tell you there's a lot of people out there, firsthand knowledge, all these people that have come into our community already that are really interested in like that component. There's a lot of people out there that are, you know, big, not into big players, but they love fantasy, like betting, right? There's a lot of people that are out there that are watchers, right? That are streamers that love watching that content, but aren't players. There are big millions and millions of audiences just on those subsets of people that can come into the league and say, well, gosh, I would really like to see X, Y, or Z, and I want to vote for that. Not because they're the most diehard player potentially to that game, but because they have an interest as a streamer, as a community person, as a, you know, better or whatever that happens to be. And I think that's the important part, again, is to increase the pie, is to increase the people that are involved in this sphere and not limit to just one type of player or one type of person, is providing multiple opportunities to get them engaged.
Well, and with that too, is there any, you know, I guess we can't know till they come out, but emerging technologies that maybe you guys are really excited about integrating into World Play League, or anything you've thought about that you're like foreseeing in the future? Like, you know, if this technology became feasible, that'd be a really cool thing to integrate for us.
Yeah. I mean, at baseline, I think the quick answer is we still like the possibilities on the AR VR side. I mean, I think you're seeing that. And obviously with Apple's recent release and, a lot of things from that sphere, you're seeing that blending, the blending of technologies, which obviously we're fans of, being, you know, a digital game league, but having some, you know, in-person, you know, games, so to speak, that you can play that are tied to the blockchain, the data side. So we see that as being a real opportunity. The future of that, you know, we see as a big part of gaming overall. So then it should be part of us. So like I mentioned, we might have, even though we have, you know, 15, I think two of them, two have a VR AR component to them, which I think is a healthy chunk, you know, considering what the overall market looks like in terms of what we look. So we're optimistic about what that can look like. We're not 15 for 15, right? We do see other opportunities here, but we think about how people play, what that will look like. And as long as the technology continues to improve, which I think that it has, right? We've seen a lot of game demos from even from the couple studios that we work with on this. The technology is improving. The accessibility is getting there in terms of what the graphics look like, the, you know, reducing some of the lag time, the playability, like, you know, the geolocating of different attributes, different, you know, packages or loot boxes, whatever. That's getting better, right? So then as that becomes more popular, to what degree, who knows? I don't know that part. But as that becomes more popular, and that, you know, gets integrated into more games, well, then, yeah, obviously you can start to see how this starts to build on top of each other. So I would say that the AR, VR thing, we're a blockchain company. We're still, like, obviously optimistic about that. And we see that as the future. And, you know, blockchain has been around for a while. It is new-ish, right? It's not like this is the first year, but it's not as we have the evolution that other games have had. So I think I'll stop there. I mean, there's some other stuff that's out there that I could talk on, but I think if we just improved the accessibility and the performance within the Web3 gaming space and the AR VR, we'd have enough of kind of like a gaming evolution revolution to support a whole new plethora of the games that, you know, we haven't had yet before.
Yeah. And I think it's funny, you'd find, you know, I never find anybody in Web3 critiquing traditional gaming, but I will always find people in traditional gaming critiquing Web3 as well as critiquing traditional gaming. And just, I always think it's an interesting, and then I'll find people from traditional gaming who are like, oh yeah, traditional gaming is awesome, but I'm way in on Web3 now because this is like things we've been discussing for 20 years that are actually feasible.
They're
like, it's been a no brainer. And I don't know. It's interesting to find this medium of people who are like, oh heck yeah, I've been wanting this forever. It's finally here. Let's do it. And then the people who are shaking their fists because all they associate Web3 gaming with is NFTs. And they're like, well, NFTs are a scam. I'm like, yeah, 99% of NFTs are a scam, man. I wouldn't touch them with a 100-foot pole. But the 1% out there that are actually doing something good, you can't negate it. You know, can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Sorry.
Yeah. And I, you know, we were building and working all along this last year. And, you know, there's a lot of that. Right. But I think there was a healthy change in that where a lot of that crap, that shit that was out there, hopefully died. It's not all going to die. It's all going to come back in different forms, but we lost a lot of it, and which was great.
Yeah.
We're going to continue to see, you know, this new badness, I guess, so to speak, for good words, go spring back up. But with that said, there's a lot of good in the technology that's behind it that is getting into people's minds, right? And we see that transition happening with even bigger publishers, bigger game studios. I was reading an article, I don't know, a week or two ago, that said like 70% or 75% of the top game studios in the world either are or have plans to transition into Web3. Like, eventually it's getting there. Like, that you can't have that mass kind of movement occurring. You're still going to have these gaming communities because we talk to them all the time in terms of never Web3. Like, I won't do it. But, you know, a lot of people said that about a lot of technology. And I think the mom and pop, you know, roofers are now have websites, you know, when the internet wasn't cool. So I think, you know, specifically for gaming, it's taking time, but everything does. And then we're going to reach that curve where you're going to get that adoption and everyone's going to go, well, of course, it was always going to happen. So we're not there, but we're getting there. I mean, every million that you pick up of new users over time, I mean, that adds, you know, it adds to it. It's not, there's not 10 people playing Web3 gaming, right?
Right.
That's, you know, so
yeah, we have a healthy ecosystem now at this point. I mean, you know, we have, I always think of, well, I guess now they're Games GG with their whole Web3 game awards and everything like that. That was really, I honestly was waiting because that was the first time something that had happened. And I was like, that had way more people than I anticipated, which I was like, so clearly there's a bigger market here than if all anybody wanted to look at it was that data of how many people tuned in, which I think they had 300,000 or 500,000 people tune into that, which I guess, you know, for them, until that point, I'd never heard of them until I heard about that thing going on. So I was like, that's pretty good for someone I've never heard of, you know, in my opinion, with the metrics. But I guess what I'm saying is it's getting taken seriously enough now that there are people actually going out there to be like, you know, we're trying to evaluate these games. And again, it's always going to have that parallel to traditional gaming. A lot of things we see here, with the exception of the technology and the way in which that unique technology operates, we are mimicking a lot of traditional gaming because it has its tried and true methods, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the same thing with Web3. We can't completely ignore what has occurred up to this point, right, with traditional gaming. There are a lot of good things in terms of best practices and growth and mechanics and how games have evolved that were good. You can't throw all of that away, which I think maybe a couple years ago, it was like, oh, all of that's crap. Well, no, there were good things to learn from that, vice versa, right? Now you're seeing, I think, the traditional publisher, the traditional studio go, well, not everything is for everyone, but there's some really nice components that come from this. And I think that's where we're starting to get. This year, next year, you're seeing that those lines start to get blurred between those games and having those components. And I just really am, I'm obviously very excited. We saw all that capital get raised back in 2022. That's starting to hit now in 2024 and into 2025. So, yeah, I mean, this is a fun time, I think, for Web3 gaming overall because of what's happening on both sides of the equation with Web2 and Web3.
Well, yeah, and luckily I feel like it's every day I'm seeing, you know, and people will still like be like, but like if somebody's like, we successfully raised $4 million, I'm like, that's $4 million that I have for my project, man. So I can't sneeze or laugh at that versus somebody raising $15 or $35 million. You know, I'm like, that's even greater, sure. But I feel like it's every other day I'm hearing or seeing like another Web3 game or studio is like, hey, we just raised a couple million for our thing. And I'm like, that's great. Like, it feels like money's just getting injected left and right. So I take it at that too, that clearly VC firms or people who are venture capitalists are seeing a big possibility here that maybe other, you know, maybe even we're not seeing yet, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I don't know. I think they're seeing what we're seeing.
That's what I like to believe. Yeah, yeah, you know.
What we're seeing. I think the, God love the VCs, but I think there's a little bit of a follow there, right? I think some of the metrics has had to come out. You have to sell the vision. I think for the early adopters, there are a lot of really smart strategic VCs out there, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But then I think for the rest of them, where that big capital came in, what you're seeing now is, okay, they did that. These games are performing. All these people are coming. You have this community. Oh. And I think we're at that O stage right now. It's like that's starting to follow through. It's coming in. Great for the for the money that came in earlier, right? A couple years ago. That it's performing well. It's not just a money game, but I think the technology has started to really prove itself. And again, the studios have been getting a lot smarter. Like kudos to a lot of the Web3 developers are out there that are continuing to hammer this out. They've gotten really smart, really adapted to the changes in the market. So that's also what's been working too.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Well, looking ahead, how do you see World Player League evolving in the next 5 years? And what legacy do you hope it will create in the gaming community?
Ooh, nice little wrap-up question. I don't know if it's a wrap-up question, but it felt like it is. 3 to 5, right? Like, it's just stuff changes so fast. But I'm going to give you the answer that I always scoff at, but I think it's important, which is, like, an ecosystem that can get to the billion players, which I always think is the dumb line. Like, okay, everybody says that, but we really see ourselves being able to bridge the gap between the Web3, Web2 worlds. I can't speak too much on the IPs and the brands that we will be bringing on this year, but we're talking tens and hundreds of millions of social followings and active users within traditional spaces. Like, we have a pathway to hit that. So I think in 3 years, you know, having 100 million in the ecosystem between all the games and internal to ourselves is very feasible. I think looking at that continued growth into 5 years, you know, multiple, you know, hundreds of millions, I think is very possible for what we're doing based off of what we have in our pipeline and the games that we're currently working with. Outside of that, you know, from the player standpoint, is continuing to just add to the network, add to the quality games, whether it's Web 2 or Web 3, and making this a really strong account for them, an ecosystem for them to continue doing what they love to do, but providing them rewards that they didn't even think would be possible or been too hard to obtain, right? That could be monetary, that can be recognition, that can be awards, that can be the first place finish in their country, their city, like providing really cool opportunities for people that haven't been available that they wanted. So I leave that part open-ended because we do want the players to shape that journey in terms of what they want to see and where we go. But what I can say and I can speak to is the numbers on our side and from a growth, like, again, bridging the gap between the two, welcoming a lot of great, strong companies, you know, athletes, celebrities, those types of things that have not been involved in the Web3 space before, really having an entity for them to enter and be successful. And then conversely, sharing that with the people that are in. So we're always going to do right by our community. We're never going to shy away from that. So in 3 to 5 years, you know, continuing to add that value, which is why to this date, you know, we haven't launched a token. We haven't done certain things that were quick injections. We're like, whenever it makes sense, we'll do it. And it's because we have that long-term play. So you're always balancing, like, I want to make, you know, the crypto community, I want the token, I want to make quick money. I want it to go 10X, 100X. Okay. But we're also doing things for 3 to 5 years down the road where we have to invest the capital into infrastructure, into games, into the IPs, so that in 3 to 5 years, it's still as profitable and revenue generating as it was within the first month. So, it's a very long tail vision, but we're hammering out. We're still very optimistic about it.
No, and I don't think there's anything wrong with having a long-term vision. I think that's always probably a necessary. I don't think of it as a necessary evil, but I'm a long-term vision guy myself. I know some people like long-term vision is just like, they're like, I'm trying to get to tomorrow. I can't long-term vision.
Exactly.
But I think it's always a good thing to have, especially when you're on a project basis. You know, it just gives you, at least at the times where you're not really sure what your next move is, you're like, well, we always have that goalpost at the end in sight, no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. And for the people and for the players and for those that want to get in because they've got tomorrow to cover, right? Then that's great. And provide opportunities for them to do that very quick, you know, within the same day or the next day or whatever, right? Having mechanisms, opportunities for them to do that. But yeah, we wouldn't be a stable, you know, hopefully reputable company because we don't have that already laid out. We have to do that and we have to be able to convey that. So yeah, there's a push and pull there, but it's fun.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Well, then, so my last question, actually, now, gotcha.
Oh, okay.
Was the wrap-up question.
There you go. Fair enough.
It's just kind of, you know, there's a lot of young people, I feel like, coming into this space, people who, you know, just, you know, I feel like more and more young people are getting into technology, emerging technologies. They see an opportunity, a way to make a career path out of what was once considered probably impossible, definitely with gaming, let alone with Web3. So I'm just wondering, like, what advice would you give to anybody who's up and coming, who maybe wants, is thinking about starting a Web3 project, just wants to get involved in the space, doesn't know where to start, what to do?
Yeah. Join something, right? It's like the basic answer, but it's true, right? Like, there was a lot of us. Me specifically, like, it's not like I came into this because with all this wealth of knowledge, I didn't know anything about Web3. Web3 wasn't even the term. It was, you know, it was blockchain, and it was cryptocurrency. And then, you know, it's all these different types of things. And when I really was involved, it was like altcoins. I don't think we call them really altcoins anymore, but whatever. Now it's meme coins. But anyway, it's more just learning. I think that you become more dangerous as a professional or someone in the space the more you know. And then within that, through your learnings, you'll find a game, a project, a company that's worth following or joining a space or an AMA, getting involved in their Discord. You'll find like something to volunteer a few minutes or an hour at doing, and you'll make a name for your space. I think the best thing about the Web3 space is the community. We are still smaller-ish, right? We're all 2 degrees away from somebody. And you can get in and make a name for yourself by just, you know, being true, authentic, whoever you are, being you as that person, and getting in and making an impact on whatever that is it may be, right? So I think joining a Discord, joining a Twitter, you know, getting in on a space, you know, volunteering, being a part of it, owning a token, I don't know, whatever, or just playing the game if you're involved in the game, right? Because blockchain's so big, you know, it could be DeFi, it could be NFT projects, it could be gaming, whatever it is. I think just being familiar with that and learning whatever it is that you can will instantly make you in the top 1% of Web3 knowledge in the world. And now you're an asset. You will be an asset to someone, whether it's to that project that you really want to involve yourself with or to something else that pops up. So I think success goes to those that show up, right? So join something, just whatever it is. Success will follow you because you're in the right place when an opportunity strikes. So yeah, I'll go with that.
No, I 100% agree with that. That would be my advice too, is I just say, find something to get involved in, no matter how small, and you'd be amazed how what you think is not much time built in will really make things snowball for you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, Peter, is there anything I missed or we didn't get to talk about that you wanted to, you know, you're just bursting to talk about?
I really like tacos and pizza.
It's a good combo.
Okay.
It's a solid combo.
But I don't like taco pizza. So
that's, well, taco pizza's hit or miss. Yeah. Some places make it really good, some places make it really bad.
I'm totally just making stuff up off the cuff. People are gonna be confused on that one. But no, I think it's been a great pleasure talking with you about it. And I appreciate the time. If anybody's listened this long and they're still interested, obviously look us up online on our website, you know, worldplayleague.com. Find us on LinkedIn, Telegram, Twitter. I'm there a lot. We're very responsive as a group. So if anyone has a question or is interested, like, we will respond to you. And you can talk to anybody on the team, and we'd be happy for any input or any ideas that people have to share.
Wonderful. And to second that, I will have all that info in my show notes. So if for some reason you can't find it, you will find the links there to be able to get to everything.
Good enough.
Peter, thank you so much for being a part of this. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Matthew. Appreciate your time.
Well, friends, that's another episode down. If you enjoyed this podcast, we would really appreciate you rating it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you can rate and wherever you listen to and get your podcast. It would mean the world to us and help get this podcast to people who truly are involved in Web3 gaming, blockchain, and cryptocurrency and want to learn more and stay on top of these emerging technologies. If you have any queries, want to reach out about any collaborations or advertisements, as well as want to reach out with any improvements you think we could make on the podcast, please email us at theweb3gamer@proton.me. We would love to hear from you and take every response very seriously. Take care and keep gaming, my friends.